Good morning. It is time to get up with Dak. The D in Big D stands for deceit. Someone trying to make him look bad. The question is who? Meanwhile, the Dolphins' old quarterback talks about the Dolphins' new quarterback. And wait till you hear what he has to say. This couldn't be going better in Miami. And then, if Michael's dream team took on LeBron's dream team, which legend would wind up with nightmares? You've got questions. We've got answers. It's a Friday edition of Get Up, starting right now. I'm delighted you have chosen to get up with us as we head into this holiday weekend. Mike Greenberg here in Bristol on a very busy morning. Let's jump right into it with Get Up and Go, which this morning is brought to you by SiriusXM. The Major League Baseball Players Union has responded to the league's proposed coronavirus safety protocols. Among other things, the union wants more frequent testing than what has been proposed. Players also objected to a ban on the use of showers and hydrotherapy, so they're trying to work towards a deal. In the NBA, the owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, Mark Lazary, told CNBC there seems to be growing momentum towards being able to resume the season. He said, quote, hopefully within the next 6 to 8 weeks, we should be playing. I'll sign for that. SEC presidents and chancellors are scheduled to vote today on whether to allow their schools to open athletic facilities for voluntary workouts on June 1st. We will have the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, live here on Get Up at 9:30 Eastern. The NHL Players Association's executive board is voting on a 2014 playoff proposal as the format for whenever the league can return to play. Results of the vote could be revealed tonight. So there are plans everywhere to bring sports back. Meanwhile, the Cowboys and quarterback Dak Prescott, are they creeping closer to a deal? They have till July 15th deadline to get it done. That's 54 days from right now. Dallas, of course, has placed the exclusive franchise tag on Prescott back in March. And since then, it feels there's been very little movement. I want to bring in our Cowboys insider, Todd Archer. Todd, good morning, because there were reports flying around yesterday. Everyone saw them about huge money between Dak and the Cowboys. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Greeny, whenever they make this deal, if they get this deal, the numbers will be huge. But from what I've been told, they're not at $35 million a year just yet. For story we have this morning up on ESPN.com, that the Cowboys' most recent offer is a tad under what Russell Wilson makes per year, $35 million, and a guarantee that puts him on par with Jared Goff's $110 million from the Rams. But it's the structure of the deal that we don't know, and none of us do, what's fully guaranteed, how it's paid out. But a quick history lesson here with the Cowboys. And the last time that they did one of these mega deals was in 2013 with Tony Romo. 6 years, $118 million. And Romo couldn't be franchise tagged. He could have waited. Instead, he got a guarantee of $55 million and an $18.1 million average. The guarantee was the second most among quarterbacks. Now, in fairness to Prescott, Romo was working off a $67 million contract, and Prescott made about $4 million on his rookie deal. So yeah, a little bit of a difference there for those two guys.
That's a huge difference, obviously, in so many ways. I think if I'm a fan today, the question I want to ask you is there any reason to be concerned that a deal doesn't get done by July 15th?
Well, there's always a reason to be concerned, because when you get to that deadline, it can crop up pretty fast. But in 2015, again, another history lesson, Dez Bryant had the franchise tag, and that went right to the deadline. Minutes before the deadline, he signed his 5-year, $70 million contract with the Cowboys, and they were able to get that done after he was not really around during the offseason. Right now, there's really nothing that Prescott's missing on the field because of this virtual offseason program. I have a feeling that Greeny, we're going to go through this for another 54 days, and on that 54th day, you'll see the Cowboys and Dak Prescott come to an agreement.
All right. I have a feeling. Book us for live on that morning, Todd, because we'll definitely need you then if that's when it's going to get done. Thank you so much. Well done. Have a great weekend. All right. Here's my crew today. I've got Mike Tannenbaum, and I believe making his first appearance on Get Up this morning, and it will certainly not be the last, is our buddy, new friend Rob Ninkovich, who we'll get to in a second. But Mike T, I want to start with you, because when we saw these numbers flying around there yesterday, and then almost immediately everyone was saying this isn't true, my first thought is back to when this first started. I had a lot of players on here saying, watch for the reports to get out there to start trying to make Dak look bad, to try and turn sentiment against him. Does it feel to you like that's what's going on here?
You know, certainly indirectly, I could see Jerry Jones speaking to friends and associates saying that Dak is overreaching, but Dallas is to blame themselves. They made three mistakes. They paid Zeke Elliott where they didn't have to. They didn't extend Amari Cooper when they gave up a first-round pick. and they re-signed Lyle Collins, a guard who's replaceable Greeny. So those three mistakes have put themselves in this position. So while they may be muddying the waters, they have a high-character, productive quarterback that they have to pay.
To your credit, you were saying that a year ago when they were first making these deals. You said they're getting the order wrong. They should be taking care of the quarterback first. So, Rob, what are your thoughts here? It seems simple to most of us. They should just pay Dak Prescott the money. What do you think?
Look, they know more about Dak than anybody. They see him every single day. They see him in practice. They see every single throw that he makes. So why haven't they paid him yet? Why have they not given him what he wants? Well, because they don't want to go out and pay top dollar for him. Because there's some questions there. There's question marks. If they had no questions and they knew beyond doubt that, look, this is our guy. We're going to pay him the most of any quarterback in the NFL. I think it would already happen. So they offer him a contract. He turns it down, right? Now you have to just say, okay, well, play under the franchise tag. Go out there and make your money. Go out there and be the best quarterback in the NFL if you want to be paid higher than Russell Wilson. Look, I get it. In the NFL, they overpay guys early and they hope it works out. But in this case, we've seen it with Jared Goff. We've seen it with other teams. If you make a mistake and overpay, you're going to be hurt. So we'll see what happens moving forward. I would anticipate if it doesn't get done that they're going to have him play it out this year.
That's an interesting perspective that you give, because generally speaking, it just is the next man up who usually gets the big deal at quarterback. But you're saying if you were the one making the decisions, you wouldn't do that?
No, I wouldn't do that. I would offer him a reasonable contract. Look, I played with Tom Brady, a guy that didn't make top dollar in the NFL, but he was one of the best, and the whole team was better for it. You want to be top paid? You want to be the best guy in the league? You want to make the most money? We want to build a championship team here. If you have to take a little bit less, take a little bit less. If not, you might be playing for somebody else.
Hey, Mike T, how worried would you be about him playing on the franchise tag? What are your thoughts here? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd be really worried, because now you're looking at Kirk Cousins. He plays this year. Next year, he makes over $37 million, and he walks out the door. And no disrespect to our new friend Rob here, but it's a lot easier to find linebackers than it is quarterbacks that have won 40 games before the age of 27 in the NFL and led your team to the playoffs twice. So I know he may not be perfect, but it's a lot harder to find these guys than it is other positions.
You going to take that, Ninkovich? I mean, those are fighting words. It's not that easy to find a linebacker, is it?
Hey, Mike T, I might put a Sanchez picture behind me next time.
Can we, by the way, just get a very quick, Cindy, can we get a quick look? That might be my new favorite flex that anyone has put up there. I don't have a picture of myself sacking Philip Rivers. That's an extraordinarily well-placed picture you have there, Ninkovich.
Thank you. I appreciate it. There's plenty more pictures to put up.
Well, and that's an even better flex. Yeah. Okay, now let's get to that.
Those are Jet players.
Let's get to that teammate you were talking about, and that would be Tom Brady, who, as we all saw this week, was spotted working out with his new Buccaneer teammates at a local Tampa high school earlier this week. Buccaneers general manager Jason Light told our Scott Van Pelt he is thrilled with Brady's fit in Tampa.
We have a head coach that, you know, be quite frank, isn't going to be here for the next 15, 20 years coaching the Buccaneers. So I think it was actually a perfect marriage. You've got two guys that got something to prove. They want to win. They want to win now. They got the same mindset.
I really like that as I bring my insider Jeff Darlington into the conversation this morning. I mean, that's a pretty open and honest way of assessing the situation with an older coach and an older quarterback. What more can you tell us, Jeff?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love the budding rivalry between Ninkovich and Tannenbaum. That's a good one we should be really watching. But look, when it comes to Bruce Arians and Tom Brady, this is a perfect marriage from the urgency standpoint, but it's also a perfect marriage from where both guys are sort of in their lives. And I think that Bruce Arians has long recognized, even before there was ever really, this was necessarily on people's radar, the idea of Tom Brady going to the Bucs, Bruce Arians did look at this and say, wait a second, I've got the chance to coach somebody who I believe is one of two smartest people I have ever met in football, which is Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. And Bruce Arians sort of conceptualized in his mind what it would potentially look like to coach Brady. And what he came up with was the idea that, like, look, if we go into this, and I'm not even going to necessarily expect Brady to come in here and he's going to have to tell me all of his new language. I'm going to say to Brady, hey, do you want to instead go ahead and learn this system that I've got here since you're one of the smartest guys in the world? And Brady says, yeah, let's do that. And there's this collaborative effort out of the gates already that we've seen from Arians and Brady before they've even really gotten to meet in person. And I think that that's really going to benefit them in the coming months.
And it's interesting, especially considering the uniqueness of these circumstances where they don't have the usual offseason. They may have almost none. Jeff, stay with me here because I want to bring Ninkovich and Mike T back into this. And Rob, you know, you played with Tom Brady and you were making an interesting point in our meeting this morning about what the one of the adjustments, if you will, that the Buccaneers receivers are going to have to make, or one of the way what things they're going to have to get used to in playing with Tom.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to be able to take a lot of criticism and being yelled at by Tom Brady. Look, when Bill Belichick gets in your face and yells at you, it's uncomfortable, and you kind of don't know what to do. When Tom Brady is screaming at you because you didn't run the route right and you didn't sit when you're supposed to move, or didn't move when you're supposed to sit, like, and he's screaming at you, I think that is going to be their biggest issue. Because, look, being yelled at from Jameis Winston and being yelled at from the best quarterback of all time to do it, those are completely two different things. So when Tom Brady gets down there, he's gonna get into people. He's gonna let them know that, look, this is serious. I'm here to win. I'm not here. I don't care about your feelings. If I'm telling you to do something and you're not doing it, we'll find somebody else to do it. So I think that's gonna be the biggest adjustment for the receivers, for the offense, is having direction and being yelled at from Tom Brady. Because look, he's not gonna back down from anybody. He's gonna yell at you. Evans, he doesn't care. He's gonna yell at you. Make sure that you're in the right spot. So I think that's going to be a big adjustment for the offensive receivers, the running backs, even the offensive line. They're going to get chewed out by Tom Brady.
What do you think, Mike T?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Coach Parcells used to define greatness as saying you have attributes you can't see, and he will be a force multiplier. You will see the mental mistakes go down dramatically with those offensive skill players, and he will bring things to the table you just can't quantify. We just watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan. We saw what greatness was in that Chicago dynasty, and Tom Brady is going to bring that same presence to Tampa Bay. And by the way, now we have something that Rob and I could agree with. Getting yelled at by Coach Belichick is really uncomfortable, and I can relate to that, unfortunately.
Now, from back in your days when you guys were working together, Rob, give me an example of what it's like getting yelled at by Belichick.
Okay, so this is a great story, actually. In 2009, we were playing Jacksonville. There was a play that I thought I did correctly. I hit the quarterback. I thought I did the right thing. Came off the field, Bill was screaming at me, like right in my face. I kind of panicked. I had no idea what to say. So I said a play that I ran in college, not even the right play. And he looked at me and said, "We don't even have that play," screaming it. So I was just standing there like, did I just get cut? I might not be here tomorrow. And then fast forward to the next day, he realized that I actually ran the right play. And he didn't say, "Hey, I'm sorry." He just said, "Hey, that play, you actually did the right thing." And I was like, all right, so I still have a job. Great.
All right. And you hung around long enough to hang those pictures on the wall behind you. That's really well done. All right, Rob, it's good to have you with us here today. We got a ton of football on the program this morning. And coming up, he hasn't won titles in L.A. the way Kobe and Magic did. But does LeBron already belong on the list of the top all-time Lakers? They're starting five. We'll talk about it. And then if Brady does win a seventh title, does he pass Michael as the greatest player ever? This is a conversation worth having, and we will as we get up with you on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Gillette, the best a man can get. And by Disney Plus, all of your favorites all in one place. Sign up today. All right, so I hope you saw this earlier this week. The Lakers all-time starting five revealed by ESPN.com and their Hall of Famers top to bottom. The point guard, Magic Johnson, helped reinvigorate the NBA, led the Lakers to five championships, three-time MVP and finals MVP. Imagine him in the backcourt with Kobe Bryant. The Black Mamba won five championships, a pair of finals MVPs. The All-Star Game MVP award is now named after him. So those were easy choices. Jerry West, the logo, is on their all-time five. He was the first ever finals MVP. He won that honor despite being on the losing side of that championship series. Then there's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the NBA's all-time leading scorer, won six titles in his career, five with the Lakers. His six MVPs are the most all-time, three of those with the Lakers. And then, if that's not enough, you've got Shaquille O'Neal. The Diesel led the Lakers to a three-peat, won finals MVP in each of those three. And so those were the choices for the Lakers starting five. And look, no team had better players left out, if you will. And Wilt Chamberlain, who didn't spend most of his career as a Laker. Elgin Baylor, who certainly did and is one of the greatest players ever. James Worthy. And then there's LeBron James. And so for that, I wanted to bring in my buddy Jay Williams this morning. Hello, Jay. I want to start there because...
Good morning.
Look, LeBron has played basically a year and a half in a Laker uniform, but he is unquestionably one of the great players of all time. What does he have to do to become a top five Laker?
He has to win multiple chips wearing a Lakers uniform. At least there's no way that he's going to surpass Kareem with five. There's no way he's going to surpass Kobe Bean Bryant with five, Magic Johnson with five, Shaquille O'Neal with three. The only person that he would be able to potentially eclipse would be Mr. Clutch. Now, the thing that works in against LeBron James for Mr. Clutch is that Mr. Clutch was a Laker his entire career. He was pretty much an all-star every single year that he played the logo. He won a championship in 1972. And for most of the part, Greeny, a lot of his championships were hindered due to Bill Russell. That's going to be a large feat to accomplish. But I think that would be the only one he would be able to potentially do if he were to win two chips in the next couple of years. That's the only way, potentially, and that's still going to be a far stretch.
Yes, he's going to make a lot of people mad if you were to take the logo out of the starting lineup. Look, the Lakers starting five, I hope most people got a chance to see all of these that they posted on ESPN.com. It's fascinating. Theirs is by far the best. You're talking about four players who were all ranked in the top 10 all time, and then the guy who is the logo. LeBron is in the starting five for Miami and Cleveland. I don't think he ever makes it, to be honest with you, as one of the Lakers. I guess if he plays a lot longer than I'm expecting him to, but to bump Jerry West, I think, would make a lot of people mad.
I agree with you, Greeny. I mean, year 17, how many more years can LeBron James go? And I mean, as it relates to Miami, yeah, he's enshrined in their dynasty. He's part of their top five greatest of all time. Cleveland, by far. But when you start going to legacy organizations, Lakers, Celtics, those are going to be hard feats to accomplish, my man.
I'm with you. Okay, so then I had another thought yesterday that I wanted to bring up. And I want to bring Rob Ninkovich into this conversation here, guys, because, Rob, you played with Tom Brady, and I guess it should give you some indication of what my life is like, that I spent a lot of time thinking about this yesterday. And that is, we all so easily just say, Michael Jordan is the greatest player in the history of American team sports. And I sit here thinking to myself, what exactly is it Tom Brady hasn't done? And this is coming from a person who considers him the arch rival of the team that I root for. But they have the same number of championships. He's played longer. He's accomplished as much. I'll ask you, Rob Ninkovich, as one of his teammates, is Tom Brady actually the greatest player in the history of American team sports? Or should he be surpassing Michael Jordan on this list?
That's a hard no. That's a hard no. Look, I love Tom. Tom, I love you, baby. But look, my MJ, Michael Jordan... I grew up in Chicago in the 90s, okay? Like, I used to put the TV on and watch the Bulls and shoot hoops all by myself. Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time. I don't think he'll ever be replaced. Look, he was around the world loved by everybody. And there was no Instagram, Twitter. There was no, you know, instant access to an athlete. And Michael Jordan, look, he's got his own song, Like Mike, If I Could Be Like Mike. I don't think there's a Like Tom song out there. There's no Like Toms. So it's got to be MJ. Sorry, Tom, but I don't think you can't replace MJ. You can't replace the logo. There's no way.
For what it's worth, on my old show, we did a parody called He's Brady and He Knows It, but that's a whole different story. It wasn't quite as popular a song. but Jay, there's one thing to be a global icon, which Michael unquestionably is and probably unmatched in that regard. But as far as just what they accomplish as players, in your mind, Jay Willis, a basketball guy through and through, could Brady pass him? Is there anything he could do with the rest of his career that he would pass him?
No, he can never surpass Michael. And Tom Brady could win more Super Bowls. The biggest difference between the two, Greeny, is that Michael Jordan is the greatest cultural icon in the history of sports. In the history of sports, you have kids that are waiting in hours and hours and hours, miles long, to get his shoes. He is a trendsetter. You have rappers, you have entertainers that sing about Mike. He's extremely relevant. And I'm not saying that Tom Brady is not relevant, but I don't see kids waiting in line for miles and hours for TB12, right? Products. It's good online, but it's not the same as Brand Jordan, what he was able to do building that signature shoe with Nike. I think that extends his legacy to a point that is pretty much untouchable for any athlete.
I agree with you. But again, I think we're having two different conversations. I'm just talking about their accomplishments as players. As global figures, Jordan is there with Ali. I understand that part of it. But as far as what they actually did in their sport, Jay Will, Brady is pretty close.
But Tom can't just be the accolades, right? I'm with you. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Nikovich. Go ahead.
If Tom wins a championship at 43 years old in Tampa, at 43, in a new city, a new place, if he wins a Super Bowl this year, you can debate that. You could say, look, this is what Tom did in the NFL. MJ did this in basketball. MJ retired, came back, won three more. Tom Brady leaves the Patriots, goes to Tampa, wins a Super Bowl. Then you can have your argument.
Okay, there we go. At least I have some criteria there. Jay Wilk, very quickly, agree or disagree?
No, I mean, look, if you want to compare stats, I'm with you. I think that it's a compartmentalized version of a debate. But when you're just talking about iconic figures, you can say they don't go together, Greeny, but Michael Jordan and his stats and his iconic figure forever go together.
Okay.
Forever.
I'm not going to disagree with that under any circumstances. Both guys coming back a little later in the hour with a bunch of stuff. We're just getting rolling here on Get Up This Morning. Coming up, Tua landed in Miami. We'll tell you why that might just be the perfect place thanks to someone who's already there. It's that guy. Coming up, Get Up, ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and Tua Tagovailoa had a spectacular college career. 22-2 as a starter at Alabama, a career total QBR, the highest of any in the history of that metric. Of course, injuries were a major factor, a broken finger, injuries to the knee, to the quad, surgery on both ankles, and then, of course, the dislocated right hip that prematurely ended his college career. Last month, the Dolphins took him number 5 overall. His aqua and white Dolphins jersey, already the top-selling jerseys in the NFL. Come September, Tua will likely be backing up Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has been the longtime starter there.
I'm excited for him to be here. I love watching him play in college, and I think he's going to be an awesome addition to the team for a long time. I'm as competitive as they come, so I want to go out there and start. I know that in order for our team to be successful, whoever's playing in that quarterback room has to be successful. So whether that's me out there or whether that's somebody else, you know, be it Tua, I'm going to do the best I can to help him to make sure that our position is doing the things to make our team win.
It's an interesting situation as I bring Jeff Darlington back in, and you know that team and that situation so well. I shouldn't have said, obviously, that Fitzpatrick is the longtime starter there. He's just the longtime everything everywhere. But he really does seem to be a perfect the perfect guy for Tua to be coming in alongside. Tell everybody why.
the perfect greenie. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick might ultimately go down, if this is a thing, as the greatest bridge quarterback in the history of the NFL. And not only that, like in this particular situation, when you've got a guy who's coming in with these health concerns, by the way, every time I bring up to the Dolphins, when do you think we'll see Tua on the field, they throw their hands up at me and basically say, what do you want from us? Like, we haven't even looked at the guy and to see where he's at since before the combine. So, like, they don't know when he's going to be on the field. Second, we're dealing with a virtual offseason. So, you know, normally GMs always want to say that the rookie's not going to get on the field, and the rookie ultimately does. In this case, it actually makes sense why Tua wouldn't get on the field right away. And you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is the ultimate competitor, beloved in the organization. I mean, I think they would hire him right now for some lifetime position to do something. I don't even know what it would be. He's competitive enough to not want to win, but also respectful and professional enough to bring Tua along. Quite honestly, I don't know if it equates to wins this year for the Dolphins, but it is the perfect situation when it comes to bridging one quarterback to the next. But I don't have to tell you that, because Ryan Fitzpatrick was also the perfect bridge for the Jets when it came to Sam Darnold, and they still haven't been winning very many games, Greeny. Not to bring that up. I know that's a little personal.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm
saying. Well, that's a whole other situation for a whole other day. But no, I think it's a good point. They really do have a very good situation there with the young quarterback coming in and the guy who, instead of a number, should just have a bridge on his jersey. Well done, Jeff. Let me go back to my guys here, Mike T and Rob Ninkovich. And Mike T, if you're making this decision, start him or sit him on Tua if he's healthy?
Yeah, I would definitely sit him. And just to add to what Jeff said, Chan Gailey's a big X factor here. Ryan Fitzpatrick had a great three-year run with Chan Gailey going back to their Buffalo Bills days. Again, with the virtual offseason, there is a lot for Tua to learn. And you have Ryan Fitzpatrick, who knows Chan Gailey's offense. So to me, that's an absolute no-brainer. The other X factor too, Greeny, is you have a 23-year-old Josh Rosen who's still in that quarterback room. Josh Rosen is actually younger than Joe Burrow, which is really remarkable. So Miami's in a good situation. Tua has to be their quarterback for the next 10 years, not the next 2 months. So I would definitely sit him for sure.
Mike, does Rosen have a future there? Does he figure to be on that team when the season begins?
You know, Greeny, it's the old Ron Wolf play. Play him in the preseason, make him look great, and then trade him. And Ron Wolf did that for so many years. Mark Brunell, Aaron Brooks, Hasselbeck, on and on and on. I would put Josh Rosen in situations where he looks great and then maximize his value.
It's an interesting one, I think. Rob, sit him or start him if you're thinking about Tua?
Sit. You can't push him out there too soon. Look, having the injury last year, the hip injury, that's a serious injury. I think pushing him out there too soon could probably be, you know, detrimental to the whole team. If he goes out there too soon and gets hurt again, well, then that goes back on the head coach, and B. Flo is going to get just killed in the media about that. So I don't think that he should be pushed out too soon. You have Fitzpatrick, who is a veteran player, very smart. I would say this, Mike T. I think you go Fitzpatrick and you go Chan Gailey. You combine those guys together in age, they're over 100 years old, like 117 years old combined age. So I get it. There's a lot of history there. But at the same time, this is a young man's sport. It's a young man's game. You got to be young. You got to be fresh. So maybe the change of pace would actually help the Miami Dolphins. But the first year with Tua, I would say pump the brakes. You know, let him sit behind Fitzpatrick.
And by the way, can we not ignore the elephant in the room? Can we just take one moment to admire the beard on Ryan Fitzpatrick? I mean, that, I don't even know what to say.
I thought you were giving me a compliment.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, it is comparable only, I think, to one that I've seen someplace before. Well, what do you think? When you compare, Ninkovich, your beard to Fitzpatrick's beard, what are your thoughts?
Well, now this is a TV beard, okay? This is nicely well kept, okay? Fitzpatrick has the football beard. It's long and luscious. I think the more impressive thing is the top, because his hair is real fluffy, almost like he blow dries it or something to get a lot of volume in that thing.
How did he make
it's pretty impressive.
How did he make the top of his head look like that? He looks like a Muppet. It's a very unusual look, to say the very least. But one way or another, the situation in Miami, I think, is pretty good. Let's get to the situation back in New England. Because now that Tom Brady is out of New England, the Patriots quarterback options are Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. Various Patriots players have been singing the praises of Stidham this offseason, including Rex Burkhead, who said on WEEI, quote, "I'm very impressed. Last year, even though he didn't step on the field that much, just seeing his improvement every day on the practice field and meetings, he's a very humble guy, and he came in eager to work right away and picked it up so quickly. I think that's what struck me, how quickly he picked up the offense from the get-go." Oh, Rob, you're close to this situation. Stardom or Stidham, if you will? And boy, that's a terrible pun. Do you believe Jared Stidham is ready to roll in New England?
I think Brian Hoyer will be the starter week one, and I say that because the quarterback position is one of the most important for reps under center and seeing defensive looks, looking at coverage, understanding the offense. And Rex says great points about Stidham. Great. But look, they're not practicing right now. There is no mini camp. There's no offseason. There's no training camp. We don't know when that's going to happen. So if you have a veteran quarterback who has been in the system, understands what to expect, what an NFL season is like, you're going to want to go with a guy that has the veteran leadership, also understands what it takes to be in that building. And look, when you're a second-year player, you really don't realize what a season's like as a starter. You don't understand what it's going to take. And not having an off-season does not help. So Brian Hoyer will be the starter week one.
Interesting. Tannenbaum, what do you think?
Yeah, I disagree with Rob on this one. I think he's starting. Bill Belichick told us this last August. He cut Brian Hoyer for Jared Stidham, an unheralded fourth-round pick a year ago on a team that had championship aspirations. And look at what Coach Belichick's done. He said no to Jordan Love. He said no to Jameis Winston. We could go on and on and on. All these quarterbacks that he's passed on, he must really like Stidham. And I'll go back to this. When you think about Dak Prescott, an unheralded fourth-round pick, led the Dallas Cowboys to the playoffs as a rookie, Jared Stidham's taking over a good football team. There's no reason why they can't be successful this year with Jared Stidham as their starter.
Mike Tannenbaum, who is the favorite in your mind going into the season in the AFC East? Which team?
The New England Patriots. They are the defending champions. And when you think about that running back room, the New England Patriot running back room is the best room of any position group in all of football. And I think they're going to be balanced on offense. Their receivers aren't ideal. But until someone shows me otherwise, they are the best team. And I think Jared Stidham's, the belief they have in him has been now almost a year. And think about all the quarterbacks they passed on. They are the favorites, in my opinion.
Rob, who's the favorite?
Well, you win the championship the last 11 seasons in a row. I don't think you can say that they're not the favorite. It's going to be a lot closer this year without Tom Brady, because going into the Patriots stadium, going in to play the Patriots without Tom Brady, your confidence is going to be a little bit higher.
All right. Interesting. It's going to be a very interesting season to watch. And obviously how this offseason continues to progress might play a big role in all of that. As we continue, in 1992, Michael Jordan led the Dream Team. 16 years later, LeBron led the Redeem Team. If those teams played each other, what might happen? We've got the answer next. And we've got beards. Look at that. That is spectacular. Not sure what Ryan Fitzpatrick is doing, but I like it.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Even from early age, it was full throttle.
This kid is a totally different level.
They're like, who is this kid, Lance Armstrong?
I'm not saying I'm going to win every race in the world, but I can try.
On Wednesday, October 2nd, I was diagnosed with testicular cancer.
After you faced death, was it hard to take EPO?
No.
You can see our next 30 for 30 titled Lance, Sunday night, 9 Eastern. It's on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Of course, our last 30 for 30 was about Michael Jordan, and it created a lot of debate about, among other things, who's the greatest player ever, Michael or LeBron? But how about which of their Olympic teams would have won head-to-head? LeBron weighed in on that on the Uninterrupted the other day.
One thing about the 92 team, they had a lot of grown as strong men, like those guys be lifting cars. Like you ever see the strongest man?
The strongest man. Yeah,
the strongest man competition. Those guys are like brute strong, you know. But one thing about the 08 team, we got a lot of wiggle to our game. We might get killed on the glass if shots, but I feel like it ain't gonna be a lot of shots missed anyways because of these two teams. It's too many shot makers. It'd definitely been a hell of a game.
It's fun to think about, and they did it, so we figured we would as well. Here's the teams. All five members of the Dream Team starting five are in the Hall of Fame. Frankly, almost all the rest of them are also. The Redeem Team already has one Hall of Famer, of course, in Kobe Bryant, and all the rest of them are going in. When all is said and done, the argument could be made all five Redeem Teamers are going in. So, Jay Williams, why not? Who wins if the Dream Team plays the Redeem Team?
Grinny, first off, can I ask you, and I want to be respectful to everybody, but can everybody just take a seat? LeBron James, Jason Kidd, Carmelo Anthony, David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, everybody else. Can we just watch Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant play one-on-one? Can we just watch them play 2-11? Like, that would be worth the entertainment within itself. It just takes me to a dreamlike state of mind if I could watch those two actually play in their prime against each other. But to answer your question, as much as, I respect LeBron and I love D. Wade and I know the power of that team and the wiggle of that team and the shot makers that they have and Kobe being Bryant being on that team, it's hard for me to say that team could beat the makeup of Michael Jordan, Pip, Larry Bird, Charles Barkley, who led the team in scoring. You think about the sides they have up front with David Robinson, Patrick Ewing. Larry Bird often gets looked over, but he's one of the most crafty, gifted scorers the game has ever seen with his passing. It's going to be hard to beat the Dream Team. As much as the Redeem Team is kind of the next iteration of the Dream Team, the sides and the strength that the Dream Team has, I think, eventually will overpower and will wear down the Redeem Team.
I'm just a believer in the expression, respect your elders. They'll be the first, and they, to me, will always be the best. The Dream Team will always be the best, whether anyone could have beaten them or not. I'm old enough to remember when players on the other team were asking people courtside to take photos of them because they were guarding Michael Jordan at the time. That was just a different cultural event, unlike anything that we have ever seen. I want to actually come to some real basketball conversation here, Jay, because something I think reasonably important has come up. I know that you brought this up on First Take yesterday, and Adrian Wojnarowski brought it up with us here. And that is that the NBA might consider, if they're fortunate enough to come back and finish this season, a play-in scenario for the final playoff spots in both conferences. They're trying to figure out how are you going to do this. And this could play a pretty significant factor in the Western Conference. If I could put up quickly the standings in the Western Conference. Okay, so this is the way things would go. Right now, the Mavericks are way the heck in front of everybody else who was behind them. And then you got the Grizzlies, you got the Blazers, you got the Pelicans. You're talking about interesting players here, including, of course, Luka Doncic and Zion and all these other guys who were in the mix here. And the question is, if you were to create like a one-game tournament scenario for those final spots, Jay, Will, I'm torn on this. Do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's a brilliant idea. And I understand what naysayers are going to articulate here. They're going to say, well, what's the point of playing the whole season and the grind and the tears and, the effort put in by Memphis and teams like Orlando? I understand that. I get that. But we're not talking about a regular season here, Greeny. We're talking about a season that was cut short due to a pandemic. Think about the millions, the billions of dollars of revenue that the league has lost here. Think about the network partners that they have, ourselves, TNT, Warner Media. Think about all the brands that are paying to live on this platform with the NBA. If you want to find a way to excite everybody, if you want to find a way to get fan engagement high and extend the runway before you get to the playoffs, why not have a one tournament single game elimination series? We always think about a team like Portland. Yeah, they might have been out of it, but that was mostly due to injuries. Zach Collins potentially could come back. Jusuf Nurkic could come back. That's a team that got to the Western Conference Finals last year. I would love to see them have a chance. It would create so much intrigue and so much mystery, and all these teams being together on campuses, if that's down in Orlando. That would be the pay-per-view before the pay-per-view. I would pay money to watch these games because each and every game would mean something. And I'm not saying it wouldn't mean something if Memphis or Orlando got there, but I want to see that, Greeny. They have my attention.
I get it.
It's brilliant.
I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree with a word that you're saying. There is something about the idea, however, that Dallas, which had this really good season of, you know, whatever many games they played, 65 games or whatever it was, gets knocked out in a one-game single elimination by a team that was whatever 10 games behind them, sort of invalidates everything that we watched up until then. And I also would be a little worried, Jay, about making it a tad gimmicky. Like, it feels a touch gimmicky. I'm not against it. I'm torn, I guess, is what I'm saying. You're winning me over to your side.
Just bring your A game, Greeny. Bring your game. And if you're that many games ahead of other people, Luka Doncic, Porzingis, let's go. Bring it. I mean, that's what we want to see, right? We want to see the best of the best compete. And I understand it could be somewhat gimmicky. Just a different type of year, Greeny. This is a different year. This year is an anomaly. So let's have something different associated, because we probably won't get this chance again.
No, I think you're winning me over. Look, at the end of the day, it would create an enormous amount of excitement at a time they could use it. So I'm with you. And you know a little bit about winning single elimination tournaments. You won a national championship on the college level. And speaking of that, you know, we all felt the absence of missing the NCAA tournament this past March. There was no Selection Sunday. There were no Cinderellas. No one ever cut down the nets. Our Reese Davis now shares the untold stories of what March might have been and reminds us that brighter days lie ahead.
The ball wasn't tipped. No singular shining moment, and as important, no dozens of sparkling ones. The 2020 NCAA tournament that wasn't.
It's the greatest sporting event of them all. My heart bleeds for all those kids that wanted that one shining moment.
This year's tournament was set to be a symbol of hope and opportunity like maybe never before. A chance for David to stand up to Goliath and for Cinderella to maybe be the last one standing atop the ladder wearing the glass slipper. The heavyweights? The Blue Bloods? Sure, Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, and Villanova were primed to take their usual spots on the dance floor. But this dance was about more than that. It was set to shine the spotlight on schools normally overshadowed. But not this year in Piscataway, New Jersey, where finally, after a 29-year drought, Rutgers was set to make the NCAA tournament. Waco, Texas, ready to shine in the moment. So too, San Diego, California, and Dayton, Ohio, where Baylor, San Diego State, and Obi Toppin's Dayton team had a chance to fly to unimagined heights.
It is unbelievable.
And one last chance for the senior class to make their mark on the grandest stage.
And that was my sole reason for coming back, getting this team to the tournament.
To put a bow on a storybook career and a trying year for Michigan State's Cassius Winston. And introduce the world to Oregon's Sabrina Ionescu, shining a light on her incredible talent and famed mentality that was meant for the biggest of moments.
Historic mark set by Sabrina Ionescu.
He's looking down and really proud of me.
These stories were never finished. The moments never came. But as we all wait for sports to return, we can look forward to what the tournament always represents. Hope, promise, and opportunity. And we're eager to see it realized in 2021.
We appreciate Reese doing that for us. Coming up, it is late May and still no long-term deal for Dak. What direction is this going? We've got the answer next.